Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky Williams. Sam Claflin joined us to talk about his new movie, The Corrupted, Bananarama. We're in the studio to talk about their new album, Madonna and the Spice Girls. The man of a thousand voices, John Coleshaw, was as always brilliant with some of his best impressions, and Nick Butter told us all how to survive incredible endurance challenges after 3 years of running marathons all over the world. All of that and more on the way. Enjoy, my friends, enjoy!
From starring in Hotel Babylon, Homeland and Suits to playing with Robbie Williams' bongos, our next guest has done it all. Returning to our screens in the third and final season of Jamestown, tomorrow night at 9 p.m. on Sky One, please welcome the weirdly relieved Manchester United fan, Max Beasley!
Alright, good morning, Max. I don't know where to start.
Good morning, Chris.
We'll get on to Jamestown, because we must do. Jamestown Series 3, Episode 1, final series tomorrow, Friday, 26th April, 9 p.m. on Sky One. Robbie Williams bongos, let's go there first.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Wonderful to play.
But this is a real thing, isn't it?
I mean, yeah.
People don't know. Come on, tell them if they don't know.
Yeah, no. I went on tour with Rob in 2003 and 6, and we did the Nebworth gigs, which was amazing, and then Ireland, and then all over Europe, actually, which was fantastic. But he has also got a nice set of bongos.
Now, for people who don't know about the Nebworth gigs, there was a big rivalry at the time, bizarrely.
That's
and
right.
you couldn't write it, and you might not believe it now, but believe me, back then it was true. There was massive rivalry between Robbie Williams and Oasis.
That's right. And I actually remember being in the house with Rob saying, and him saying, "We're gonna, do you know the Oasis boys did two nights at Nebworth?" And I was like, "Well, you know, a big band and they're good." And he said, "Well, we should do three. I'm going to do three." I said, "Well, do you think that will go well?" He said, "Yeah, I think it'll." And it sold immediately. I mean, it was amazing. So, yeah, it was true. It was a huge, huge rivalry between the boys.
Well, I think Oasis set the record for the attendance of two gigs in Britain ever.
Yeah.
And so Rob said, "Okay, we're going to do three." And he still holds the record
yes.
for that, doesn't he?
Yes, yes. I think it's like 135,000 a night. So okay. it was
over
amazing.
Half a million in 3 days.
Yes, yeah, something like that.
To see basically one headline act. And yeah. it was Robbie and you, yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Were they three nights on the bounce, those?
Three nights on the bounce.
See, how on earth do you get to the second one after coming down from the first one? And the third one, well, that's on another planet, isn't it?
I know. And actually, we came over the Nebworth actual, the site on the helicopter, and I made the mistake of saying to Rob, "Brother, look at that. It's a bit weird. They're all here for you, man." And he went, "Oh, that's the worst thing they could have said to me." And I said, "No, look, from the scaffolders, the riggers, and then to the people coming to see, it's a lot of pressure, kid." And he was like, "You need to stop talking, brother. I've got to get in the zone, you know." But he did. He was he's an amazing frontman. And those gigs were, I have watched it recently about 2 months ago, that actual show. You can see it on DVD. And it is phenomenal, man. It's infectious. You know, he's a great frontman.
Okay. So, Max, Jamestown, Series 3, Episode 1. When did acting come to you, first of all? After all, this is what an illustrious career you've had.
Yeah, 94. I was working with, we did Berlin MTV Awards with George Michael. I was playing drums for George. And then I was in the studio with, it sounds like I'm name dropping, but it was just like, it was my life. And I was recording with George Benson in the studio. And I watched Raging Bull. And I went, "I want to do that." So I went to New York and started studying with a method acting coach, and that was the change.
But it's funny because you were blessed with this talent for music, and yet you went, "Okay, I fancy the acting." Mm. So what is that about? Tell us about that decision.
It's about unfortunately suffering from perfectionism, and you know, you never achieve that, and but you're always striving to be better. And with the acting, I knew that I wasn't as good as I was a musician,
right.
And I knew there was a road to travel, and so I wanted to try and perfect it. And it's taken many years, but, you know, I do all right.
So what's happened to Jamestown now?
I think it's there. I think they've restored it. It's an historical place for people to visit. And they have, you know, people dressed up in the garb and everything. And they do like...
So we can go?
You could go.
It's like El Dorado. Do you remember El Dorado?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I do.
Oh God, it's amazing. Okay, so you finished it. You were together for how many years? You and the rest of the gang?
3 years.
3 years. Okay. Yeah. Please tell me there's a big end of series celebration.
Oh yeah, there was a huge end of series celebration, yeah. But I reside in America, so I was on a plane, and so I missed it.
Oh no! Do you live in America now?
Yeah.
Whereabouts do you live?
Los Angeles.
Okay, how's that? How are the Brits out there?
I don't really see a lot of Brits out there. Right. We live up in Mulholland and Beverly Glen, Sherman Oaks, so we stay a bit away out of West Hollywood.
Right.
And eventually now I've got two little girls, and I think it's imperative for them not to grow up in Los Angeles. I want to get down to Laguna Beach eventually.
So many people have said that. So many people who've been over there and then have had kids, or the kids have begun to come of school age, and have said, it was brilliant, but not anymore. We don't want them to be there at school. The traffic is apparently makes this like a walk in the park.
The ocean, man, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, of course, I'm with you. We have this permanent question on the show. You can give us your take on it.
Sure.
Okay, do we think that happy people are drawn towards living by the ocean, or do we think that living by the ocean turns you into a happy person?
The latter.
You think so?
Yeah. I think depressives are drawn to living by the ocean, right. And I think the ocean gives them some serenity.
Well, you would know, but that's another conversation for another day, isn't
yes.
it? Jamestown, Series 3, Episode 1, starring Max Beasley and all his pals. Don't miss it. And you can catch up on Series 1 and Series 2 on Sky One.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
Well, look, I'm jealous of pretty much everybody who's running on Sunday who remembered
to enter.
What a plonker. But I am especially jealous of you, Nick Butter. Good morning.
Morning, Nick.
Morning. How are you?
So tell everybody what you have been doing and what you are continuing to do.
Okay, yeah. I've been doing a lot of running. Over the last 18 months or so, I have been attempting to set the world record for running a marathon in every country in the world. The whole point of the trip is to try and raise some money for Prostate Cancer UK. Yep, absolutely. And I've just flown back in from Kabul. So after completing marathon number 136...
Gosh, so how many countries are there?
196, so 60 to go.
Hang on a minute, you deferred to him for that. Normally you take a claim that you know how many countries there are.
Well, it sort of depends, don't you, on who you decide is the arbiter of how many countries there are. You could go FIFA, or you could go with the UN, or you could go with Nick. And I'm with you, Nick.
Thanks.
So 196. Today's with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look, that's really cool as well. Look at that on your wrist.
Yeah, quite a lot.
Can you explain what it is, please? Yeah. We're on the radio.
We're on the radio. This is many, many bracelets from all over the world.
They're very cool. They're very duty. They're leather. They're beads.
Yeah, it kind of makes you look cool, but I'm really not.
You are? Of course
you're
cool.
You are.
Okay, before we get any further, have you had your own prostate checked?
No, because I'm not old enough yet.
Right, it's never too early. Right, come on, over here.
I'm getting up as I speak.
Tell us some stories, Nick. Tell us,
Chris. Very red. welcome to show business.
which countries have been especially exciting? Which countries have been especially wonderful?
There's been so many. I mean, I've ran around erupting volcanoes in Guatemala.
Erupting volcanoes?
Yeah, around in Antigua.
You can't move for the vessels, seriously.
Honestly, there's so many. I ran with 1,000 kids in El Salvador, running around the UN compound in Kabul just yesterday. Yesterday.
Okay, what did you do yesterday that can be that? 8-7-2-2. Come on, anybody go up against that in any way, shape or fashion?
26.2 miles around the UN. What's it like?
Compound in Kabul.
It's amazing, yeah. We were gonna try and get out and see the city, but obviously there's reasons why you can't do that. So we took the decision to run around the compound. It's about a kilometre and a bit around. And so I had lots of people running with me. Honestly, it was amazing. The people there were just fantastic. But everywhere I've been, whether it's school kids, whether it's teachers or loads of families that I've stayed with, I think I've stayed with close to about 70 families around the world. And so I'm very, very lucky. Yeah, so I've gone all the way from the west of the world all the way through. So North America, started in Canada in Toronto on January the 6th last year, which was minus 25 degrees C, which was horrible. And then moved all the way through the Caribbean, down into South America. I've done 4 months in Africa last year, so I've done about 70% of Africa. And just in a couple of days after the London Marathon, I will go to Ethiopia to continue another 3 months in Africa.
What have you learned?
Oh, I've learned so much. Most of all, it feels like I'm kind of colouring in a map of the world. And and you think you have these preconceived ideas of everywhere that you've been, and then you start to realise that you really know nothing, and you learn more and more and more about a place. And even Afghanistan, you know, absolutely beautiful country. And so I've learned more than I can really comprehend, but I'm going to try and put it all down and talk about it again.
All right, so you've run 136 marathons in the last year or so.
Yeah.
Give us three killer tips for anyone nervous about London on Sunday.
Get some sleep. Go to sleep early. And don't try and race. Definitely don't do that, because I was listening to you earlier. Definitely got to kind of take it easy for 20 miles and then blitz it at the end. And enjoy it, because everybody tries to think about times, and I see so many nervous people.
Paula said to me, expect three issues. So if it's going really well, that's when you need to get ready for an issue. And they may not happen. She said, just expect about three.
Yeah.
It's just good to
about
have
26
that
for me, Chris.
Yeah. I know what you're saying. Okay, out of all the marathons that you've run so far, the most beautiful?
I think either Guatemala or Honduras. There's some amazing places that I really wasn't expecting to be beautiful. Obviously, the Caribbean islands are great.
I was going to say, when you said that, I thought, quite fancy that.
Did we speak to you? Were you in Barbados or somewhere?
Yeah, you spoke to us last in Barbados. Yeah, it was very early, 4 o'clock in the morning for me.
Yeah, no, we didn't feel sorry for you at all. We were still in Barbados.
We still don't. The really cold one, minus 20-odd degrees.
Yeah.
Okay, what was that again?
Toronto.
Okay, how do you warm up for a cold marathon?
Get out of bed and hope for the best.
Do you really?
No, I was so underprepared. I was expecting about minus 8, and I didn't really take much, and so I had to literally borrow everything. I didn't have gloves. I was so underprepared. Well, my fault.
Great to see you, Nick.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Good luck. Anything you want to plug before you go?
Yeah, please. Can I just plug Prostate Cancer UK? Obviously, I'm raising money for them. We are trying to do this national screening program. One man dies every 45 minutes from prostate cancer, and it's one of those things that we really need to get out there.
And they don't need to.
And they really don't need to. I'm so eager to raise this money so we can get that screening program going. And also, obviously, please plug myself, because I want people to follow the trip and either come and run with me, especially in Athens. So on Instagram, my name is Nick Butter Run, and the website is Running the World 196. So anyone wants to get involved, send me messages, please do. Nick Butter Run.
Okay. Prostate cancer, if discovered soon enough, the most preventable cancer in the world.
Absolutely.
If discovered too late, hardly preventable at all.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
Kit ready, blister plasters in place, ice bath waiting, and chafing cream on red alert. The London Marathon is almost upon us. This year's official charity are Dementia Revolution, and here to tell us all about it are Barbara's Revolutionaries, the incredible marathon first timers Scott Mitchell and Tanya Franks.
Good morning, Scott. Good morning, Tanya.
Hello.
Good morning.
How are you both?
Very good.
Yeah, we're here. We're ready.
Okay, are you pumped?
We're getting there. I'm slow pumped for me.
But that's the right thing to do. Don't get too pumped too soon, because you're going to use vital energy that you're going to need during the race. So, Tanya, of course, superstar of EastEnders.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm very good.
Now, you look extremely fit. Have you been running a long time?
No, this is my first time that I've ever run in my life. So I hadn't run until 2 weeks before Christmas. And 4 months later, I've just done 21 miles.
Oh, so you've done your big long run.
I've done a big one.
So how did you get involved in Dementia Revolution?
Well, Barbara contacted EastEnders and asked if any of the cast wanted to run for the marathon for Dementia Revolution. And I just leapt on it like a shot, because I have Alzheimer's in my family at the moment. And so therefore it was a natural fit.
Okay, but you're very light, so you do keep fit then? You've been keeping fit before?
Yeah, I mean, I've done stretching and yoga and, you know, periodically I do some fitness, but I'm not an avid fitness person. I'm not somebody that's on it every week. I'm not somebody that does it all the time.
But I've always
had it in my life. I look after myself, I look after my diet.
I was going to say, it looks like you look after your diet.
I do.
Because, you know, keeping fit, if you can't move so much, it's 80% of what you put in and 20% what you put out there, isn't it, I suppose?
Exactly.
In fact, I look after my diet more than I look after my fitness, if that makes
sense.
Yeah,
well, they sort of feed off each other, don't they, really? Which is bizarre, because you're feeding less, but they feed off each other. Yeah. So, Scott, you're leading the charge of this. How is Barbara, first of all? How is she at the moment?
She's not too bad. She's, as I most likely have said quite a lot now, the evenings get really difficult for us. And that's the thing about Alzheimer's, and you tend to get the confusion comes in a lot more during the evenings. But, you know, I... it's very important to know that there's still sides of Barbara which are such fun, and you know, and we sit and we have such fantastic conversations, and she's aware that you're very kindly one of Barbara's revolutionaries, and she just thinks that's amazing and sends lots and lots of love to
you. She is your Barbara, and she's everyone's Barbara, obviously. Yes. Yours more than most, but can we have a little bit of her, please?
That's absolutely right. Listen,
so she's very much aware of what's going on. That's the most important thing.
Yes, she's very excited. Unfortunately, she's not going to be there.
Right.
At the finishing line, just had to make that decision because, you know, from what I've been told, it's my first, it's complete kind of organised chaos with 300 people a minute coming across the finishing line, and you know, there was just complications.
No, it's not, you don't have to make an excuse.
Overwhelming.
But she will be watching on the telly.
She will be watching, absolutely.
Alright, so donate virginmoneygiving.com/Barbara's Revolutionaries. To find out more, visit dementiarevolution.org. How is your running going, Scott, my friend?
Well, I'm really enjoying it. I've reached 18 miles so far, and obviously I'm not going to go beyond that till Sunday. I think that's a good idea. I've actually really taken to it, Chris. You know, I've absolutely loved what running has given me personally, as well as what the reason that we're doing it for this cause. But yeah, it's something. I've already signed up for the 10K at the end of May. So, obviously,
you're gonna carry on beyond.
Yeah, obviously, a little bit of addiction going on in there with the running, but it's a healthy one, and it makes me feel great. it's actually been the best thing ever for my head. Right. That's what I love. It just sorts out all that stuff that lingers in your head, and I find that I can hear myself and breathe and talk to myself.
It gives you a little tap 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 rhythm, which is a sort of, in a way, it's a sort of running mantra, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
It calms you down. It's all about your breathing. You focus on that. Then when it gets tough, you can't think about anything else. You know, anything at all in the world, no matter how serious things might be or how much things are worthy of your focus and your attention. You can't think of anything apart from running the next blimmin' mile.
Exactly.
Get to the next lamppost. That's a good one, isn't it? Go lamppost to, when it gets really tough, lamppost to lamppost, spectator to spectator, cattle grid to cattle grid if you're in the New Forest.
Well, we were talking just before we started talking on the radio, weren't we? And I was saying, look, if you're worried about it, if you run 10 miles and you're feeling tired, and why wouldn't you be after all? You've just run 10 miles and you think...
And you've got another 16 to go.
If that's the thought that hits you, then that can be a little bit overwhelming. And you can think, well, I just can't do that. I'm so tired now. But don't worry about the 16 to go, and don't worry about the 10. Just get to the next mile marker, the next aid station, as you say, the next tree, the next street corner, the next lamppost. Just concentrate on the step that you're taking at the time. Don't worry, the rest of the marathon will sort itself out, and it won't help if you're worrying about it now.
And the great thing about the running the London Marathon is that there's loads of people with loads of funny signs. So if you get fed up of chasing yourself to the next lamppost or the next bend or whatever, get to the next, you're running the marathon better than Trump's running the US.
Yes.
Post. Things
that's
like that.
Perfect. That'll be a perfect mantra
for
me.
You get this all the time. Seriously, because you don't know this. You've never done it.
No
that's right. Exactly.
Have you been told about all the bands?
Yeah.
All the gospel choirs?
We did the half marathon. We did do the Vitality half marathon, which was about 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And actually, I mean, even with that, people came out and the bands that were playing there. And I've found a really nice thing for me while I'm running is singing. I really love singing out loud while I'm running because it kind of reminds me that I've still got a bit of energy left in my body. If I can vocalise it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It tells me that I've still got something left to
work
with.
So what is your go-to tune to keep
you going? Do you know, actually, the thing was when I did the half marathon, was that there? It was the bands. Wherever the bands were playing, I just picked up on the song and I used it for the next mile.
Well, you can run lamppost to lamppost, string station to string station, band to band, choir to choir.
Yeah.
And it's funny because when you hear one in the distance, that gets you to them.
Yeah.
And then when you're there, you get this little shot of adrenaline or endorphins because music does that to people. Music is what feelings sound like. And then you run past them and you take that band with you for another quarter of... I will go, right, quarter of a mile, quarter of a mile, quarter of a mile. And it gets you there. I'm so excited for you both. I'm so excited for you both.
Me too.
Right, Scott, Tanya, come on, who's in your gang? Tell us.
Okay, so we have Adam Woodjet. Is with us Jake Wood, Emma Barton, who plays Honey, Natalie Cassidy, who's brilliant. Really, she's a great new runner, isn't she?
She's
really strong, actually, Natalie.
Yeah.
Kelly Shirley, Jamie Borthwick, and Jane Slaughter.
All right, okay. And apparently, we keep refreshing on your website, and it's creeping up. It's creeping up. The money's creeping up.
That's brilliant news. Thank you, everybody.
Amazing. Thank you.
Thank you are
so
more
much.
Than welcome. And we are proud to be running. We are running for you this year ourselves. So that's
that
great.
That is fabulous, and thank Chris. You, Chris. Thank you.
No, you're welcome. You.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky. The best entertainment all in one place. Virgin Radio.
This Sunday, the streets of London will be awash with over 40,000 people running the 26.2 miles of the London Marathon. Joining us now are two people known for enjoying a leisurely shuffle from time to time. Please welcome the King and Queen of Marathon Commentary, Steve Cram and Paula Radcliffe.
Good morning! Look at you two! Life personified!
Best intro ever, the King and Queen of Marathon
and
Commentary.
And you are still the world mile record holder.
Thank you for that, Chris. And you still look wonderful as well.
Thank you very much indeed. So, Paul, nice to see you. Thanks for being
nice
here.
Nice to see you.
Thanks for hosting
us.
Our lovely Children Need Bidders. What time do you start work on Sunday morning?
What time?
See, this is the thing about Paula. She never knows what's going
actually.
On.
We've got a two-way at 8:46.
Yeah, but we've got to get up way before that. Yeah, we're on air very early.
Right.
This year, the programme starts about 8:30.
BBC One?
BBC One.
Yep.
We're right across all of the platforms, as they say
you
these
pan
days.
Pan BBC?
We pan BBC right until about, almost till about 4 o'clock, I think. So right. Almost everybody will be able to watch friends, family, except Vassos Alexander, apparently.
Oh, here we go.
Crossing the finish line.
Here we go.
So, yes.
Thank you, Steve.
There will still be...
It didn't take long, did it?
Paul, have you heard about
no.
Okay, Vassos forgot to enter.
Oh, no.
Have yeah. you ever...
And there's no...
Of course she hasn't. She's Paula Radcliffe. Well, the question stands. Have you ever forgotten to enter a marathon?
No.
No.
I've entered quite late and they've let me enter.
They might. Yeah. And Vassos thought he sort of had the same billing as you then, perhaps.
No, I tell you what, I forgot to fill in the form. But as I was saying earlier, I'm actually quite grateful for that, because when you're a little bit removed from the maelstrom, that if you're in the eye of the storm, if you're running, commentating, you know, you're a part of the game and you don't realise what a big game it is. What a, you know, like you were saying, Jamie Carragher didn't realise what a big deal it was playing for Liverpool until he stopped playing for Liverpool. The fact that I'm one step removed from the London Marathon makes me realise what a big deal it is. I'm thoroughly jealous. But
of
I
course
also
this year could be one of the best ever. You know, you've got Kipchoge against Mo Farah.
Yeah, but I get to watch and listen to that. Because normally I'd be an hour behind them. Whereas now I can will Mo Farah beat Elliot Kipchoge? That would be something, wouldn't it?
It would be something. I think he's got a good chance.
Has he?
Despite everything that's been going on over the last 24 hours. Yeah, I do. So here's the thing. Here's the thing. Hmm. You know, Elliot is the, as they call him, the boss. You know, he's the best ever all-time great marathon runner and has won his last 9. But is he still getting better? Don't know.
Well,
maybe.
He's just broken the world record.
But I think Mo is still getting better.
Right, so we're going to find out, aren't we?
Yeah.
Okay, what do you think, Paula?
There'll be at some point, what Steve's trying to say is everybody only has a finite number of top hard marathons in them, and they're all different. And we don't know where Elliot's limit is, but at some point, he has to start coming down the other side, because it happens to all of us. And Mo at the moment is still getting better with each one. So at some point, that's going to cross. But that could be in Tokyo. That could be here. That could be in 5 years. We don't know.
Go Mo. Now, talking of maranoia, right, because lots of people getting maranoia. Lots of first-time marathon runners are getting lots of maranoia. This might be the best maranoia I've ever heard of. Ready for this? Steve says, maranoia totally set in. Have you ever heard maranoia like this? I am running on Sunday. It's my first marathon. I am riven with maranoia. But even my friend Rachel has maranoia and she's not running. Now, that's the best... that's the best I've ever heard.
But sympathy. Isn't that like when you're pregnant and then the husband goes, oh, I've got a tummy ache.
Yeah, phantom maranoia. Yeah. Okay, what, did you ever get maranoia before?
I mean, I think
what,
it's...
What kind of maranoia did you experience?
I have the recurring dream that you just can't get your shoelace tied in time, or you just don't get, you're too late to the start and you can't get to the start line and everybody's gone without you, or you get sent the wrong way.
You've had those dreams?
Really?
Yeah. That is unbelievable.
In a marathon, if your shoelace is untied, you've got 2 hours and, in your case, 15 minutes to tie your lace. Imagine a 1,500-metre runner if we had to stop and tie it. That would be more stressful for a 1,500-metre runner.
I didn't mean in the race. You can't get tied at the start line, so you can't get the knot tied properly and then you can't get to the start line.
Because the first time you ever run, you do take so much care about everything. You know, tying your shoelace is tight enough. 4 or 5 in, you don't worry about those things. I remember checking my... running shoes for Stones about 15 times between 9 o'clock and 10 o'clock about 5 years ago. You get all that, don't you? And then you just relax about everything.
Yeah, you do get more relaxed. It's like anything. The more you do it, the more at home you become of it and with it. And you're also never excited as excited as the first time that you do it because it's so amazing.
Yeah.
But you expect that more and more each time, so it keeps you more relaxed, I think, in the build-up.
And the first one I ever ran, you came and gave me a pep talk, or I came to you on Friday, and we had lunch together, didn't we? It was brilliant. Thank you so much. And that was your last one, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was.
And you experienced a little bit of what Vassos experienced about how much fun and how special marathons are.
I loved it.
Was it your favourite marathon, your last one?
I think so, yeah, because it was probably my most painful one, and it was definitely my slowest. But at the same time, I loved it.
Listen to this. What time did you finish it?
2:36.
Slow. How slow is that? What a loser. 2:32. Seriously.
No, 6.
So 2:36, even worse. Oh, sorry. Carry on. Go on.
No, but I loved it from start to finish because I was off the championship start. I was surrounded by runners the whole way.
Yeah.
And everybody was supporting each other. And I think you see the real party of the London Marathon.
You ran most of them on your own, didn't you, I suppose?
Well, you're not on your own because you've got thousands of people along the streets.
Yeah,
but in the race, you're on your own. You don't get that atmosphere
so
all around
strange.
You.
Was that really more painful, the 2:36, than, say, the 2:15?
Well, yeah, because my Achilles was sore before I started. So
yeah, and the longer you're
kind of
there,
sore all the way through.
So
this
actually,
is what I maintain. I've always every time I meet Mo Farah, I say, Mo says to me, "You're a better long distance runner than me because you can run for 5 hours and I can only run for 2." I say, "Oh no, deal done."
His longest ever run was 3 hours when he got lost.
Yeah, I know. So he's got 2 hours to go to get up to my standard. Quick question to you: you're appreciating the London Marathon more this year, not running it, than you ever have done running it, because you have a different perspective on it.
Yes, and that's what you need sometimes, don't you?
And you can sense all the excitement that's going on. And now that you've experienced that and you understand it a bit more. Which is brilliant and really interesting for so many reasons. You have that perspective now. So if somebody did give you a place now...
I'd snap it up.
Would you?
Yeah.
Right, well, we've got to... The Whiz Kids thing we talked about yesterday, is that possible? Apparently the London Marathon give Whiz Kids the chance, don't they? The chance to get... or use up any returned or unused places. And they allow them to do that. But I think they're the only charity that they're allowed to do that because it's a big kids charity. So can we find out about that? That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Now, talking to kids, you ready for this?
Go on.
Ready for this? Hayley says, you're going to have to read it. I can't read it. I won't get through it.
Good morning, Chris. Can you say hello to my little family, Miles, Madison and Lacey? We're all sat in the car on the way to court in Cardiff for an adoption celebration. Today is the day our youngest daughter gets our surname. Very, very excited. Probably going to do an ugly cry. Good luck with a marathon.
Isn't that great? Aww.
That's lovely.
Now, if you taste the tears, happy tears aren't salty. Taste them. They're not salty. That's how you know the difference, Paula, isn't it?
I never knew that.
Sad tears are salty. Happy tears aren't. You all right there, Kirst?
Yeah, absolutely fine.
Congratulations. What a wonderful story.
Great thing.
What better reason to go to court?
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Dapper Dave, over to you.
He's a footballing titan, the captain of the TalkSport breakfast show ship, the talisman of very long lunches, and for one day only, our unexpected marathon running guru. It's the living legend, Alan Brazil!
Good morning, Al!
This is buzzing in here. This is fabulous.
Live band behind you, Cast.
I know. By the way, these guys have been in early. I was in at 6 and they were here already.
You were in at 6 today?
Oh, yes.
Congratulations.
5:30, actually. 5:30.
Well done.
By the way, great news.
Go on.
Well, great news. On, next Thursday.
Oh, right, right, right.
We have another one for the party.
Yeah, we do.
Kelly Jones is coming in a minute. All Kelly's right. up for it.
Okay, so I haven't told Vassos yet. Okay, so next Thursday, I've stupidly agreed to go out with Alan for a drink, all right? I thought it was lunch at 1 o'clock. It's not. It's in the pub over the road at 10:01. Okay, and you've been warming up all week for this, haven't you?
No. 10:01 is like 2:01 for most people. Yes, let's get it into perspective.
Of course it is, and that's fine. And responsible drinking has never been more responsible. Well,
No. We're in bed at 8 o'clock. So
Coisty's coming out. You're coming out. I'm coming out.
Dean Kelly Saunders, Jones. Kelly Jones, Stereophonics coming out.
Are you coming out?
I can't come.
Okay, John?
Where is it?
London is where it is. Okay, that's the day. All right, that's perfect. Right, okay, a couple of stories. First of all, you're threatening to come to Monaco. Tell us more about that.
I'd love to come. Grand Prix, fantastic. My favourite is, funny enough, apart from the race, the Monday afterwards, on the way back to the airport, you stop at the Grand Hotel, down, take the old funicular down, the beach club there for lunch before you get the last plane home.
So, can you be our social secretary for this?
I'd love to be.
Because it sounds like you're all over it. You've done Monaco many times before.
Yeah, beautiful. Great. Okay. Fantastic. It's a great occasion.
Do you have to give it a year off to recover from being Brazil'd?
No. But it is a long weekend. Dear, honestly.
It is.
Yeah, 3 days later, you still think you're not rocking on the boat.
Rocking on the boat, baby. Right, now, Alan has got the best half marathon story I've ever heard. Oh. Okay. Are you ready for this? Paula Radcliffe, you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Steve Cram, you ready for this?
Ready.
Team, you ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell us your half marathon story.
Well, first of all, it's been very unprofessional, unlike the greats I'm sitting next to.
Yes.
It's very unprofessional. I was playing for Spurs on the Saturday away from home. I think we're up at West Brom somewhere and we got a win and a good game scored. So, as you do on the bus coming back, a few drinks, you know, celebrating. I was living in Hertfordshire at the time. Hit the local pub, great. About 10:15, so I've had a few, right? Saturday night, lovely. 10:15, door knocks, in comes a mate, says, brilliant, I have a quick pint. Don't forget tomorrow, pick you up 6:15. I said, no, I'm not golfing tomorrow. Not a chance, no. I'm celebrating tonight.
6:15 a.m.
6:15 a.m. Sunday morning. I went, nah, I'm not golfing. He says, no, you idiot, it's the Wellingarn City Half Marathon. I went, yeah. He said, you pledged you'd run in that. I went, no chance. I can't do that. He says, you can. You've already, we're taking a lot of money. You're running. I'm picking you up 10:15. So I get back home, get the usual, where have you been? Look at the time, da-da-da-da. I said, never mind that. Is there any, have I got any running shoes here? He says, no. But there was a pair of blue Adidas Gazelles. You know the leisure wear? Well, they'll have to do. So anyway, I get picked up at 6:15. Unbelievable. I can't believe it. There I am at the start. Bang, the gun goes off. And halfway around, I was so bored, I thought, I better put a spurt on here. I didn't enjoy it. It was murder. But I actually finished quite strong, 13.1 mile, and I'd done a 1:32. The winner was 1:07, though. You know, that is unbelievable. But I'd done a 1:32. Well, yes. I couldn't walk for 10 days. I couldn't train. I got fined 2 weeks wages.
By the way, you centre forward for Spurs at the time. And because you ran in the Gazelles. Don't run in the Gazelles.
Well, it's a different fitness. Cramer, you would know that from running to football. It's totally different.
It is, but that's impressive. I've met a few footballers over there, because back in the 80s, Kevin Keegan ran Great North Run. There was a lad called Nick Pickering, you might remember.
I know, lovely guy. Nick
the other day. Nick was a good run. I think he ran an hour 20-something without training.
Not in Gazelles, mate.
I'm pretty sure knowing Nick, not having the preparation.
Do you know what it'll be yesterday? He came on yesterday, Ewan Thomas. I done him. He's on a 1:40. I'm like, get in there.
So you've been talking half marathons all week now. Come on,
yes.
Alan.
All right, impressive.
So how about London Marathon, Virgin Money London Marathon next year, Alan?
I can't. No, impossible. After the half marathon, I could not do a.
Well, we've already ordered the Gazelles.
Everyone says that after their first half marathon.
My daughters have ran London, Paris. They love it, but I couldn't do it. My back would just give in.
How many years ago was this approximately, this half marathon triumph?
84.
Mm-hmm. So 84, that'd be 35 years in between half marathons or marathons. Come on, you got to that.
No, I can't. Lovely. Dean Saunders had asked me, he said, well, what sort of weight were you then? I said, 13:10. What, you know? I said, 14:10.
Right, you got to go. You got to go back
I've
on the show.
Go. Okay. Great. Good luck. Everybody. Good luck Sunday.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
Location, Location, Location is in its 32nd series and celebrating 20 years on the air, which officially makes it more epic than Game of Thrones. Here to tell us the secrets behind its success, the property prophet, the mistress of moving, the wonderful Kirsty Allsop.
Good morning, Kirsty. Okay, more epic than Game of Thrones?
I don't think so.
Well, of course you don't. 32 series. That's a marathon in itself, isn't it?
It is. It's an ultra.
It is an ultra, isn't it? It could be even the Desable standard, yeah. Couldn't it? Sorry, we're getting nerdy here now. Right, so first series was when? It's not been 1 year. Sometimes you double up, don't you?
So, well, this is the thing. But Channel 4 and Phil and I are in dispute because we say it's 23 series and they say it's 32. So we have, in our minds, we've done 23.
Well,
so
why is the discrepancy?
Because they split it up, you know, in different ways. So we sort of make it in blocks every year. But of the 20 years, sometimes we have done actually two huge blocks.
All right, so from your side of the fence, you're looking at 23.
Three series. They're looking at 32 series. But it's 20 years, well, whichever way you look at it.
20 years, whichever way you there are more, more than one way, skin and a cat, even in television.
Yeah.
All right, so how has it developed? How has it changed?
Not at all and lots.
It's a good answer, actually. So, it's quite zen, that.
It hasn't changed in that we do exactly what we always did, which is that we help families and couples and brothers and sisters and the different people you have buying houses find a home. It's always been about finding a home. It's never been an investment show. And it, obviously it's changed in that lots of things have changed. And we had a big meeting a couple of days ago about how we were going to celebrate the 20 years. And one of the things we really want to do is look at the stats and how things have changed.
Yeah.
You know, like the average age of buying a first home has shot up in the last 20 years. Uh-huh. You know, and there are lots of different myths around buying a home, how hard it is and stuff, which, you know, we wanted to look at. And it's fascinating.
Yeah. So, Kirsty, question here. For Kirsty and Phil, because you do speak on behalf of Phil, he speaks
on behalf of you. Yes, we both do. Yeah.
Barry from Stroud would like to know.
Yes.
My wife and I are currently looking for a new home and would love Kirsty and Phil to get involved. How quickly can they be around? Would they be able to help us the next week or so?
Funnily enough, we are filming a new series of Location, Location, Location. You should go on the Channel 4 website. Go to the take part section and see if you can get on, because I'd love... Did you say Stroud?
Barry from Stroud.
Well, great, because at the moment we're like going so far away from home.
Yes.
And everyone, as people say, oh, you always go to London. I'm like, we're never close enough to London.
Right.
So I'm off to Leeds next week, and definitely we're looking for someone. So Stroud, yeah, go on the Channel 4
website. You must know the country quite well now, mustn't you?
Do you know, Chris, it's a huge privilege. I was in, who knows about Staffordshire oat cakes? Was I the last person to learn about Staffordshire oat cakes?
I still don't know about them. I grew up around there.
I went to Stoke yesterday.
Yes.
So I'm on the train and I'm tweeting that I'm going to Stoke, and I get these tweets saying, oh, have some Staffordshire oat cakes, have some Staffordshire oat cakes. So I sent a text to my boss saying, can you get us some Staffordshire oat cakes? Because everyone's saying I need to try them. Oh my God. They're oatmeal pancakes, basically. Not like an oat cake as we know it at all. Like a pancake. Mm. Absolutely delicious, and you can have them with anything. And then everyone started tweeting me with what you're supposed to have them with. So some people are Marmite, some people are marmalade, some people are cheese, some people are sausage and beans. They would be a brilliant
so
marathon
hungry
food.
All of a sudden.
Yeah, they'd be a brilliant pre-marathon food, a Staffordshire oat cake.
Okay, it's funny because pancakes are different, because you've got your Dutch pancakes, you've got your standard pancakes, you've got your American pancakes, haven't you? You've got your Chinese pancakes as well.
Yeah,
I just thought of a new show for you.
What?
We could do it. You know, the best Britain's favourite, because we all like those shows.
Yeah.
Britain's favourite eponymous food. So the single food item named after where it comes from and the best one of that. So you'd have your Staffordshire oat cake. You'd have your
Stilton.
You'd have your Melton Mowbray pork pie, wouldn't you? You could have various cheeses. You'd have to pick one,
Your Lincolnshire sausages.
Your Lincolnshire sausages. You'd have your Bakewell tart.
Cheddar.
That's got to be in the top five. See, here's a show waiting to happen, isn't it?
No, absolutely.
No, you think so?
Yeah.
And you could have the vote online and you could get it all going on Twitter.
Yeah.
And
it'd be fantastic.
That's the show for you?
No.
So Location, Location Live featuring Britain's most loved eponymous food snack.
Well, funnily enough, after the Staffordshire oat cakes, now I am determined, because I was quite shocked that 20 years of going around the country and I'd never come across this delicious item. So now I'm going to, like next week when I'm off to Leeds, I'm going to find out what is the food I need to head for in Leeds.
Okay, so Kevin McLeod does something on the same subject as you, houses, but he builds houses.
Yes.
Okay. So I phoned him up the other day, we were talking about houses, and I said, you know, do you know any houses for sale? He said, you don't know that, you need to build one. And he just, he has no interest at all in buying a house. No. He thinks he's mental.
No.
He says, you have to build a house, Chris. Yeah. Have you ever thought about building your own? I goes, I don't want to build a house. It takes forever.
He said, no,
it'll be fine. I'll help you build a house.
Kevin, I don't want
to build a house. I haven't got time.
No, I mean, he is extraordinary, Kevin, because I long for him to say at the end, they spent this, but it's worth this.
Yes.
And they will never put that in
I
the
quite
show.
Like that, though, don't you?
Yeah. I'd love to know, because, you know, they always go over budget and mostly kind of divorce and remarry and, you
well,
know.
A lot of them have babies, don't they? They have like, sort of virgin births, don't they? Because if Kevin McLeod comes near you, you get pregnant. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he does look after seven
he
kids.
Does, he does.
Yeah. Yeah.
Has he got seven children?
Well, his story is very complicated and rather wonderful, but seven kids,
let's
yeah.
Let's not go there. Yeah. Okay. We've got to build a house. Why do you build a house? I don't want to build a house. You must build a house. I will come and help you build a house.
Yeah.
All right, I've got to be up at 3 o'clock every morning when I'm going to build a house. I've got twins. We've got like a million children.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky. The best entertainment all in one place. Virgin Radio.
Our next guest has one voice box, but over 350 voices. Now, along with his impressionist dream team, he's bringing Dead Ringers live to the Barbican in London for only 5 shows next month. Please welcome the quite brilliant John Culshaw.
Good morning, John.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. A joy to join you.
What do you think about the news this morning that Donald Trump is coming to the UK for a state's visit?
It's going to be so fantastic. I love this country. I'm going to be so happy to be here. I'm going to see all the places I never saw last time. I'm going to go to Stratford-upon-Avon, birthplace of William Shatner. It's going to be so great. Oh, the gift that keeps on taking.
As are you. As are you, my friend. So 350 voices. Do you know because you've counted them or has somebody counted them on your behalf?
I think it was just a broad estimation. If you count up all the ones you've ever done, including Wurzel Gummidge, John Major, those going way, way back.
What's your newest one?
I think there's the politician called Richard Bergen, who is one of those who doesn't answer the question. And he's got the sort of voice that you'd expect more on Gogglebox than in the House of Commons. So he's going to be interesting.
Do you think he's going to rise to more prominence?
Yes, I imagine so. Those who are characterful and memorable, you know, you just notice them. You go, oh, there's one. Right.
Jacob Rees-Mogg a gift for you or not?
Yes, he was. He was almost, you know, there was that time, you know, David Cameron and Nick Clegg where the characters were a bit bland.
Yep.
And then in comes Boris, you know, quantitative easing for impersonation characters. And Rees-Mogg is one of those.
Yeah.
Very much, you know, like Walter the Softy from The Beano. Or sort of adapt a Brian Sewell. Take a Brian Sewell and take away all the likability and you're somewhere there.
Right, so Dead Ringers, 2002 it began. Where was it born? In whose head, in whose bathroom?
I think it was Bill Dare, the producer, a very prolific comedy producer. And we actually did the pilot show on my birthday, June the 2nd, 1999 was the first pilot. And it was first on the radio in 2000, TV in 2002. But yeah, Bill Dare would have thought of it. He produced Spitting Image in the mid-90s.
Oh, my giddy aunt, what a pedigree. All right, Dead Ringers on the road, Dead Ringers live at the Barbican, 5 shows there. Obviously, there's the rest of the country that would like to see you. This is, don't try and make out this isn't some kind of pilot run for a big nationwide tour, because it obviously is. Where are you going first?
Aberdeen! Well, we don't know yet. There is going to be one, but where, I think they'll figure that out.
All right, okay.
This is just to test the format, and run it in a bit.
How's it going to differ? I mean, obviously it's got to be bigger, hasn't it? It's got to be sort of more hyperbole, hasn't it? It's got to be... What have you done? Are the spaceships?
I hope
the lasers?
So. I hope so.
Will there be a hologram?
I think we need to write all of this down and make sure that's what we do. It'll be quite similar to the radio show. Lots of topical stuff, you know, stuff written day by day, along with some of the old favourites, some of the classics.
OK, so who's going to be in the gang?
There'll be myself, Jan Ravens, Lewis McLeod, who is enormous fun to work with. He's the most infectious laugh that I can think of. Duncan Wisby, playing all the music and so on.
Who's the greatest? Because I think you're the greatest. I think you and Steve Coogan, because you're not impressionists, you're recreators. You go beyond impression, I think Steve is fascinating, Coogan. I think he's on a different level. I don't know which level that is and how you get there. I don't know with elevators, lifts. I've got no idea. You have to be loaded in by helicopter. But he's different because it comes deep within, doesn't it?
It really does. And his sense of comedy logic. And the way he describes it in such a very easy, matter-of-fact way, he just knows the nub of where to make something funny and how to make a character memorable. I loved his Stan Laurel.
Okay, what else is going on with you?
What else is going on? Yeah, we got the Dead Ringers tour. I'm a judge on the Astronomy Photographer of the Year coming up soon over at Greenwich Observatory. And I'm doing a tour of my own at the end of the year, October and November, called The Great British Takeoff. and that's much more of a loose, more of a spontaneous thing. So I see where it goes.
John, I absolutely love it. Okay, so we're what, 17 years into? So 20 years, it's 20th anniversary.
Good heavens.
Is that why you're doing this? No, it could be.
Well, I don't think consciously. I think everybody just thought, you know, this is something we've not done with the show yet. We've not done a live run in this kind of style. So it's perhaps about time. But yes,
we got hooked on the weekend. We do this a lot. We got hooked on, we were watching Simpsons interviews. So the kids love this. When you go onto YouTube and watch interviews with the people who did the voices for The Simpsons. So you got Harry, what's his name?
Oh, Harry Shearer.
And you got the lady who does...
Nancy Cartwright. Nancy Cartwright,
who does Bart. And they can't believe that Bart's a woman. And she does this interview as Bart, but obviously as a human being. You know, and she does nearly all the kids' voices on The Simpsons. Yes. Can you do a Bart? Because I've never come across a bloke who can do Bart, because Bart is voiced by a woman and therefore it's too big a jump, too big a leap.
You know who does a great Bart Simpson?
Tell us.
Bobby Davrow.
No! really right, where is he? Get him on the phone.
He does a great... He does this. Whoa! You know, it's kind of... He takes it to... He adds a bit of helium and... You know, whoa, do the Bartman. It's a bit like that.
That's a bit like Joe. You sound like Joe...
Yes, Joe Pasquale.
Joe Pasquale. Yeah, halfway towards him.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, start at David Beckham and then... Whoa!
Take it right up there.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
They're the soundtrack to your life and they're back with the first single, Stuff Like That, from their 11th studio album in stereo. Robert De Niro might be waiting, but we're certainly not. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the legendary Bananarama.
Yeah. Woo-hoo.
My favourite intro yet.
Yeah, well, he's very good, isn't he?
Voice.
Yes.
it's really annoying now.
We get this from every guest. Okay.
It's
so
amazing.
It's well written. Yeah, it's beautifully announced.
It is.
He's got a fantastic resonance, and he's not exactly difficult on the eye, is he?
Easy on the eye.
Yeah,
we should take him with us on tour.
Yeah, okay, calm down, ladies. Okay, it's getting very inappropriate
To be honest, have him now.
Okay,
Sarah and Karen, welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
Here we go. So are you still the biggest selling girl band of all time in the world?
It's the most charted hits. That's
still
what it is, yes.
So is anybody breathing down your neck? Is anybody we have to worry about or maybe kill off quietly?
No.
So how many are we talking? How many singles?
I think it's about 30.
30?
Yeah.
Top tens?
No, they don't count those.
No.
Okay, all right. But that's okay.
It's charted.
Still impressive. 30 singles that have charted. And so you're going to increase that now because you have got a new single out. Stuff Like That is out now. The album in stereo is out now. It's the 11th studio album. When did all this start? How excited are you about it? How does it compare to the others nowadays?
The album's out this week, so that's fantastic. Yeah. The single has really taken off, and no one could be more surprised than us.
It's the first time we've actually we didn't have a deal, but we had been recording between all the live stuff we do.
Right.
We love writing songs, so we did. We just thought, well, let's do it ourselves, because that's the beauty of these days, isn't it?
Yeah,
everything's accessible.
Yeah.
So we actually, for the first time, own our own product.
Ooh, how does that feel?
Great.
Yeah,
okay,
great.
Are you 50-50 or is it 49-51? Who wears the trousers here?
50-50.
50-50, straight down the middle.
Straight down the middle.
Have you done a deal with yourself? So have you done a three... Can you give yourself a three-album deal now?
Yes. Yes, we're signed for life.
To yourselves?
Yes.
How does it work? Do you have a contract between yourself? Do you shake hands?
No.
Hug a kiss and a squeeze?
No, we've got a company.
You're right, okay.
Which we've had.
What is it called? Is it called Bunch of what?
In a Bunch.
It's not, is it?
It is. Yeah,
we've been in a bunch since
we were about 18.
All right, that's so cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so you got your album out now. You've announced some dates, but the London dates are sold out. Now you're playing Borderline in London and you're playing Amira in London.
Yeah,
two brilliant venues.
I mean, we've never done them.
Oh, Borderline's legend.
Oh, yes.
I mean, like,
is it?
Legend.
Oh, yeah.
Who hasn't played at the Borderline?
I think I've been there, but I haven't played there.
There's one in Manchester, there's one in London, and they're both, they're so, I mean, if you want a cracking night out, go and see somebody who's good at what they do in Borderline.
Brilliant. Well, we wanted to do small fan shows, and we're doing Q&As. Like Q&A, yeah.
What about Madonna playing Eurovision? What about that? You know, she's playing halftime. Playing halftime at Eurovision. Because I was listening to that, I was thinking, oh, I bet she'd kill for that song. That's what I was thinking. Could you hear it?
Yeah.
I can't remember which song it reminded me of.
She's doing Eurovision.
She's the halftime entertainment at Eurovision.
Wow.
Yeah, no, I did read that.
Yeah. I didn't.
Why would she, what's the reason?
I don't know. I don't know. But everybody's very excited about it. It's in Israel. It's in August. And I think it's in August.
No, Eurovision is in May.
Okay, May. Okay, but it's in Israel. It's in May. Okay, all right. Well done.
Eurovision.
Okay, obviously.
Who does on May the 18th?
Quite protective about it, it seems, as well. Okay.
Well, you know.
Okay, are you going?
No, but we might be having a little themed party.
Fancy dress.
Okay. Did Justin Timberlake play at
Eurovision? Yes, he did.
You are right. Well remembered.
Okay, stand by, Celebrity Mastermind, because Sarah's coming your way and Eurovision is the topic. So did you have any dealings with Madonna in the 80s?
We met her on a very first tour in LA backstage.
Yeah.
And she said she used to dance to our
songs. Oh, that's good.
In New York. That's good. Danceteria.
Cher was there.
Sure.
Hang on a minute. Yeah. Cher was there. Madonna was there.
Yeah.
Was it your backstage or her backstage?
Her backstage.
Madonna's backstage.
Yeah. On the Like a Virgin tour, wasn't it?
Okay. Those stadium tours of Madonna's in the 80s, they were mega, weren't they?
Yeah.
They were unbelievable. Yeah. They were naughty. They were funny.
The costumes were amazing.
And it's just when the stadium sort of solo tour had exploded. It was Michael Jackson first, it was Madonna second, and together they sort of ruled the roost, didn't they, around the world with that.
Yeah, but great performers.
No, awesome. What's the biggest gig? Have you done Rio?
No, we've done some pretty big ones.
We did the Grand Prix in Singapore, and that was
Hong Kong handover was probably the biggest.
Hong Kong handover
in '97, which was huge.
Imagine being the music booker for the Hong Kong hangover.
It's the government.
Handover.
It was the government
the next day.
Because all I remember that is Chris Patton's speech. You remember Chris Patton's speech?
We were there for it.
Were you really?
Yeah.
Blimey,
star act.
Okay. Just tell us more about that.
I can't remember.
It was in one of their huge parks.
Yes, were you top of the bill for that?
Gigantic park. Yeah.
Bananarama.
Who'd have known?
If somebody said, okay, who topped the bill at the Hong Kong handover ceremony? I'd think like Dame Kiri Takano or somebody like that.
I know. It's an odd choice, wasn't it?
But you went down very well, didn't you?
In hindsight.
Yes.
Yeah, it did. Well. Yeah.
What about the Spice Girls tour, the Spice World 2019?
Yeah,
are you
interesting.
Going?
Yeah.
My daughter really wants to go. She was tiny when they started, and she always used to say, "But you weren't as famous as them, Mummy, though, were you?" And
you were. Like, you were massive.
Thank you. Emma Bunton. I remember Emma Bunton saying we were the first show that she ever came to in '89
so many
at Wembley Arena.
No, yeah. I'd like to see them.
Yeah, I'd love to.
When are they playing?
They're playing. I think it's 13 stadiums now.
Is it? Wow.
And they started with 6 and extended it to 13.
Yes, I thought there was only
6. How amazing!
Gangbusters. Rehearsals already going. Apparently going very, very well. But they, like you now and again, don't require a third. But sometimes you welcome a third. They don't require a fifth, but would welcome a banana. Imagine that, one of the bananas or both the bananas from the Ramas.
Maybe you can get a guest slot.
Well, they're doing that. You know, they're inviting people on. Come on, there's got to be.
We haven't had the call yet.
There's
got to
be a twist in this fruit bowl, hasn't there? You think so?
The Spice Girls with added banana.
Oh, come on!
Banana spice.
Yeah.
Jess Glynn's supporting as well. Now, and Rick Astley's out there with Take That at the moment. This kind of stuff. Yep. And you know that only too well.
He's nicked our band.
Has Rick Astley stolen your band, or did you borrow his and now you're sort of.
It's a bit of a mismatch. Yeah. We kind of.
It's first come, first serve.
There's two sides to this story. It's like that.
They're just too good, aren't they?
It's like that Sky Atlantic series, The Affair. Have you seen that? And you see it from her point of view and his point of view. That's you and Rick Astley. That's what that is.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
Our next guest rose to fame in Pirates of the Caribbean and The Hunger Games. Now he's starring in the new gritty East London crime thriller The Corrupted in cinemas Friday 10th of May. Please welcome the ever so charming total geezer, Class. Sam Clapley.
Oh, it's all going so badly. No, well. Sam, how you doing?
I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good.
You look very well, my friend.
Oh, I don't know about that, but thank you.
No, seriously, you do.
You guys are running marathons.
No, he's not, because he forgot to enter.
Oh.
He did.
Really?
We've not heard.
He hardly ever reminds me about that.
Yeah. Your new movie, you star in this movie, The Corrupted, with the all-new Timothy Spall, because he's all new now, isn't he? He's a different Timothy Spall.
He's still the same old Timothy Spall in the weight and character that he has. Yeah. But he's new and improved.
He's a changed man, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. There's a darker side of him as well in this film, which is quite interesting to see really come out of him. So
okay, Hugh Bonneville's in the show. What's not to like about this? So take us through the plot of the movie. The Corrupted, it's out cinemas 10th of May.
The Corrupted takes place initially around the sort of beginnings of the Olympics in London. It follows the money and land grabbing that went on in the East End of London.
It's a true story. It's inspired by true events.
It's based on true events, right. Yeah. Loosely based on true events. No real people were involved in the making of this story.
Things like this, similar to this, did happen.
Yes, there was massive corruption in the government and the police force in basically aiding and abetting kind of gangsters grabbing land in the East End of London in order to sell it for a higher price before knowing the Olympics was coming our way.
Is that proven? Is that proven?
I don't.
It's alleged.
Yeah, I think it's alleged.
Okay.
It's sort of rumoured, you know, but I think it's one of those things that is almost sort of certain, but no one knows for sure.
All right, so alleged goings on.
There's no evidence necessarily.
Alleged goings on, inspired by things that may or may not have happened, are an unfold in your movie.
Yeah, so that sort of is the opening of the movie, and then it sort of takes place post-Olympics. My character's been in prison for armed robbery, and he's coming out trying to kind of woo, you know, win his family back. But my little brother, who's actually played by my little brother. Yeah, my little brother is my younger brother.
Did you get him the gig?
No, actually, he got himself the gig.
You the gig?
Always. He won himself the part. He went and auditioned. I may or may not have mentioned his name as someone who should audition.
That's allowed.
Saying that chemistry is there already. There's nothing to work for.
We're like brothers. Well, we are.
We actually look nothing like brothers. I think they could have cast someone who looked more like my brother.
Did they have to make him look a bit more like you so people might believe it, even though he is?
Well, I think what's amazing is they kind of made us look very, very different. Like, he is the current London, whereas my character was old hard man East London.
And London did change. The Olympics did change the East End of London.
It's completely transformed.
Geographically, of course, it did, from a commercial point of view, but also from a philosophical point of view. It's a different world, isn't it, now?
And so that's my character's coming back into the East End after 8 years in prison and kind of going, wow, everything's transformed.
When did we win this bid?
When did we get the internet?
Unbelievable.
So it's kind of amazing in that sense. You sort of see the new East End as it's not really been seen on film before. It my little brother's being dragged into the underground and my character's trying to help him and win the war.
Very interesting dynamics. You know, it's just fascinating. And you know, when you get yourself and Hugh Bonneville and Timothy Spall to say yes to a script, you have to believe in it. It has to be of a certain standard, and this certainly is. Now, a lot of people who don't live in London, they don't realise that, you know, if you live on the west side of London and you're shooting a movie in the East End of London, oh, that's right, that's just around the corner. It can take you forever. You might as well be shooting in Edinburgh, mightn't you? If you're coming from Ealing, your sort of area, Acton kind of area, to the East End. I mean, okay, you know, as the crow flies, it's not that far. However, there's a lot of things in between you and it. It's like a massive sort of tough mudder.
A lot of traffic.
a massive tough mudder. Yeah. I mean, it takes me as long sometimes to get to the East End of London than it does for me to get to Norfolk where my parents are.
Paris on the Orange.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, same
quite
commute.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Do you know, I actually read once, there was a newspaper article a few years back about, and it was comparing the commute from Paris to London or from the outskirts of London in, you know, some people do the Paris to London on a daily basis.
Yeah,
and they said the cost of living and the way of life in Paris is so much better to have the 2-hour commute that way instead of sitting in a car on a motorway for 2 hours.
So, okay, and of course this is all typified, magnified, if you like, exemplified this morning by your commute today to get here.
Yeah, so apologies again.
It's fine. But also what people don't realise is that the dome, the O2, is actually quite far away. I live in Windsor. Guess how many miles it is to go from the O2 round the M25 to Windsor? How many miles do you think it is?
67.
Oh, 70. Have you been looking?
No.
Is it 70? Is it actually 70?
I thought it was quite a lot.
It is a lot. Well, I was thinking it's a lot.
Oh, God. Ask her, didn't work that.
Clue was in the question.
Ask the travel person. She's bound to get
oh,
that right.
Yeah,
you should have asked me.
Of course, she does the travel.
I'd have said 12.
Okay, what would you have said, Sam?
I would have said
two. Two and a half.
I would have said I would have asked my driver.
I don't know.
He wouldn't have a clue. Yeah. No, I have absolutely no idea. My mileage in London is really, really, really bad.
All right, pal. Listen, I know you're doing the rounds with this, The Corrupted, in cinemas from 10th of May. Do watch the trailer. Go online, watch it now. Sam, you're always welcome on this programme.
Thank you. Oh, I'm very happy to be here. This is your new home. And
this is our new
home. I'd love to
you
come
like?
And visit again.
You're
I do.
Very
I thank
welcome.
You very much.
Sam Clapton, everybody. Thank you, Sam.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.